themselves to free Palestine.
Okay, hopefully. All right, on that note, we come to the end of this show. Ali Salam, editor-in-chief of Asira Press, joined me from Moscow, and Shabir Rizvi, political commentator from Chicago, with their insight.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa idh qala Ibrahim Rabbi arini kayfa tuhyil mauta qala awalam tu'min qala bala walakin liyatma'inna qalbi قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you revive the dead." He said, "Do you not believe?" He said, "Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest." He said, "Take four of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening. And know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise." Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The number of Palestinians who lost their lives in relentless Israeli bombing of the Gaza Strip has now surpassed 12,000 and counting. The International Criminal Court says it received referral from five world countries to investigate Israel's war crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. And Lebanon's resistance movement Hezbollah has launched fresh attacks on Israeli targets in retaliation for the regime's massacre of Palestinians in Gaza. Hello, everybody, and a very warm welcome to World News. Our top story, the Israeli military continues pounding the besieged Gaza Strip, with one hospital alone receiving at least 120 dead bodies on Friday. Bodies were dispatched to the Indonesian hospital from across the besieged enclave. One of the latest strikes targeted a school south of Gaza City, killing dozens of displaced and injuring over 100 others. The Jabalia refugee camp and areas east of Rafah, as well as Khan Yunis, were also struck. The official death toll since October 7th is now over 12,000, but the Gaza Health Ministry says it is increasingly difficult to document all the fatalities given a communication blackout and collapse of the health system. Israel's also been raiding hospitals in recent days, claiming that Hamas is using those facilities for its operations. The resistance movement, though, has strongly denied that accusation. The Israeli regime has ordered people inside Al-Shifa Hospital to evacuate within an hour. There are many people there that are in critical condition. I mean, the displaced can possibly get up and leave. There are thousands of displaced. We've had hundreds of bodies that have been buried in a mass grave in the underground of that hospital by hospital staff, because the Israeli regime has not let people enter or exit that facility in over a week, and has laid after a siege, it's laid siege upon the territory on the hospital. It raided it the day before last, and the Israeli forces are still in Al-Shifa, and now it's told people that they have an hour to completely get the sick and the displaced and everyone, all the medical staff, out of Al-Shifa. Meanwhile, the military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says groups prepared itself for a long defensive in the face of Israeli onslaught on Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade says longer Israel stays in Gaza, the heavier will be the damage for it. Spokesman Abu Ubaidah says Al-Qassam fighters are chasing regime forces and their vehicles street by street. According to Abu Ubaidah, Hamas fighters have destroyed now 62 Israeli military vehicles in just the past 4 days. He says this is besides destroying several buildings where Israeli soldiers were holed up in. A spokesman says Hamas fighters killed at least 9 soldiers at one such site. Abu Ubaidah also says that Hamas fighters have fired a barrage of missiles deep into occupied territories, including Tel Aviv. Israeli forces are facing fierce resistance from Palestinian groups as the regime pushes a ground operation inside the Gaza Strip. 5 countries have asked the International Criminal Court to investigate Israel's war crimes in Gaza. The ICC chief prosecutor says he has received a referral from South Africa, Bangladesh, Bolivia, Comoros, and Djibouti to investigate the situation in the state of Palestine. Karim Khan noted the court is already probing alleged war crimes that occurred since 2014 in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. His remarks come after South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said his country believes Israel is committing war crimes and genocide in Gaza. The regime's attacks on a Palestinian territory have killed more than 12,000 people since October 7th. The regime's also been preventing food, water, fuel, electricity, and medicine from entering the Gaza Strip for over a month now. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah says it's hit at least 7 Israeli targets in northern parts of the occupied territories. In separate statements, Hezbollah said it struck targets with what it called appropriate weapons and inflicted damage on them. An Israeli tank was also hit near the Brani barracks. Group said its attacks are in response to Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Gaza. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime shelled several areas in southern Lebanon. The area along the Lebanese southern borders frequently witnessed exchanges of fire between Hezbollah and Israeli forces since October 8th. That was a day after Palestinian resistance launched Operation Al-Aqsa Flood against Israel. Several Israeli settlements in the northern parts of the occupied territories have been evacuated due to the Hezbollah attacks. And now joining us for more on the program is Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist, joining us from Antalya, Turkey, and Ryan Dawson, geopolitical analyst, joining us from Osaka. Gentlemen, welcome you both to the program. I guess, Fra, we'll start with you there. Your initial thoughts on how long this thing is stretching out and how horrible, and just when you think things cannot get worse in Gaza, there are more leaflets now that they have to evacuate the southeast and go near the Mediterranean, so you can't live in the north, you flee south, and now you can't live in the south. Basically, there is no safe point for anyone in Gaza at this point, Fra.
Well, the Israelis don't want any safe havens in Gaza. They don't want any hospitals to continue to operate. They don't want any schools to continue to be used as refugee centers. While they claim to allow in 2 tankers of fuel in order to allow the sewage treatment works and the fresh water supply to be minimalized, to be used in the most basic of forms, they're quite happy to see Palestinians die of dehydration, young children who are not, it's not available for them to get fresh drinking water. They're starving the people there. If we look at what's happening in the Al-Shifa hospital, to tell the doctors and the staff and the paramedics and the patients who can walk to basically leave the hospital and walk to Khan Yunus or other parts of southern Gaza, this is basically a death sentence. We have witnessed the systematic destruction of the health service, of the infrastructure in the strip itself, and this is just a prolongation of what is now becoming very obvious. The Israeli plan is to force through dehydration and thirst, through starvation, through bombing, and through an absence of medical facilities, the people of Gaza to flee to wherever the Israelis want to corral them. And the hospitals themselves, they have been attacked because once you destroy the hospitals, what do the people in Jabalia refugee camp do? What do the people in Gaza City do? What do the people in the other regional towns and villages, when they are bombed, when they are shot, when they are attacked? If you have no medical infrastructure to help those people, that will increase the pressure on the indigenous, civilian, unarmed combatants to flee from their homes and go to wherever Israel tell them. And we can already see that the Israelis have said they will not stop in northern Gaza, that they will follow Hamas to wherever it goes. Hamas is the Palestinian people. Hamas and the resistance group are Gazans. They are there to defend their land and to defend their people. And Israel is just using the hostages as an excuse to ethically cleanse, if possible, the whole of Gaza. And I can see this going on unless it's stopped, unless there is real intervention, wherever that may come from. Without intervention, we are going to witness in the next 2 months. It's taken them 40 days to get as far as Gaza City. It will take them longer to get into Khan Yunus further south. And they will continue to carpet bomb people, to starve people, and allow natural diseases to kind of flood through the people that are refugees in crowded, unsanitary conditions, and they will let nature do what their copper bombs are not doing at the moment.
Okay, thanks, Farah. But stay on the line. I'm going to welcome Ryan Dawson. Hello, Ryan. Joining us from Japan's Osaka. Now, Ryan, the UN has said that Gaza civilians are facing immediate possibility of starvation amid mounting concerns. The Israeli plans to expand their military operations in parts of the south now where people have sought refuge from fighting. Fuel shortages yesterday halted aid shipments and blacked out communications, Ryan, throughout the strip. Tell me, denying Palestinians, aside from bombarding civilian infrastructure and going after mostly a civilian population in this densely populated enclave, why are you denying them food? What is the point? I'm trying to starve out women and children in Gaza.
Because it's a policy of ethnic cleansing. When you tell people, oh, well, we're going to only carpet bomb the north, which is already a war crime, go south. When you concentrate a population into a smaller and smaller area, that's a concentration camp. That's where the term came from, to take the oppressed people and concentrate them on a reservation. We're seeing a new trail of tears. People who, if they can walk, if they still have legs, are forced to move. Otherwise, their house will be bombed. And then, of course, they're attacking Khan Yunus as well. They have been since the beginning, just less than they've been attacking the north. They cut off the food and water because they want to get rid of these people. And they want to make it so ugly and horrible and bad that Egypt will be forced to allow them in, and then of course Israel will not allow them to return. They want the Palestinians gone because they plan on annexing the rest of the land.
And Fraud, thank you, Ryan, for your initial thoughts there. And Fraud, you know, the fuel shortages have also shut down water treatment and sewage systems, leading health authorities to warn about the spread of infectious diseases. The UN said just in the next few days they're expecting in the next 48 hours, an uptick of over 77,000 cases of spread of infectious diseases. They did not specify, but they mentioned that they're going to expect, in addition to that, at least 100,000 cases of diarrhea. I mean, that's I apologize that I had to share that with you, but I mean, it's just atrocious. I mean, you cannot use, the UN also said today, you cannot use water as a weapon of war. Well, guess what? The rules of engagement deny you the fact you cannot use water, food, fuel. Everything that Israel has a ban on is illegal against a civilian population.
Yes, Rand's completely right. Well, think about the Trail of Tears in America, where they forced the native indigenous population to enforce marches to go from one area to be relocated to another area, to leave their indigenous lands, to become refugees in another part of what is modern day America. Hundreds died, men, women, children, along the Trail of Tears. What we're watching is a second Nakba, which we're all aware of. What we're watching is, in many respects, a death march. And yes, concentration camps are a very good analogy of what's happening, but we could really call them death camps, because what they're doing is corralling people into these smaller and smaller and smaller areas, denser and denser. Gaza's already the most populated area on Earth. You'd imagine taking half of the population from northern Gaza, pushing them into southern Gaza, you'll have twice the density of civilians. And so for every bomb they drop, instead of killing a child every 10 minutes and maiming two others, They'll be killing two children every 10 minutes and maiming four others. And to leave people in the hospitals who cannot leave, who are on ventilators and babies in incubators, to make the doctors leave, it's a death sentence for those that are left behind. So what we're witnessing is nothing new. It's still the same colonial mindset. Israel is an expansionist colonial state. It cares nothing for the lives of Palestinians. It doesn't care how many die from bombs, how many are dying as we speak, gasping for breath under the rubble. It doesn't care how many children with gastroenteritis die from lack of fresh drinking water and cannot become rehydrated. This is, as we all know, mass collective punishment upon the people of Gaza. And unless there's intervention, it's becoming more and more and more obvious that the end game and the final solution that the Israelis have for the Palestinians is to force them to leave. And if they don't leave, they can watch them die.
Right. And Ryan, when Joe Biden and his administration are getting so much pushback, not just from the hundreds of protests we've seen throughout the streets, throughout university campuses, but also we've seen people, over 100 people in the State Department, at the Pentagon, say that they are opposed to this blind support. They're not saying they're opposed to support U.S. support for the Israeli regime, but not to the point where the regime is committing genocide in Gaza. They feel it doesn't sit well with them. They feel that the arms transfers by the Pentagon to the regime are illegal when it's obviously being used on a civilian population. They want no part of it. You know that gentleman just a few days ago that actually resigned as a result of his opposition to the Biden administration's policy with respect to its blind support for the regime. My question to you, why is Antony Blinken and Joe Biden not hearing the blowback, the pushback of people that their conscience cannot allow them to further back the regime in knowing exactly what it's doing on the ground in Gaza?
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum there. You have people protesting all across the United States. You have people in the State Department and other departments resigning in disgust. And yet, Antony Blinken and Janet Yellen and Sullivan and Biden continue. And it's obvious that the bunker buster bombs that they gave the Israelis are being used on apartments. It would be interesting to ask Biden if there was another active shooter, as there often are in the United States. You had an active shooter in a kindergarten. Would you just blow up the whole school? Because, you know, you'll get the gunman too. That's the kind of collective punishment they're allowing the Israelis to do under the guise of saying, well, we're trying to get rid of Hamas, so we just get to bomb a whole city full of people. And it's not just hospitals. It's their houses. It's their apartments. That's why they're in the hospitals, because they're bombing homes. That's already illegal. They've bombed everything, churches, mosques. There's not a safe place to be. They've even bombed the caravans right after telling them to leave. They hit the checkpoint. Joe Biden is asleep at the wheel, and Antony Blinken doesn't care about Gaza. He's fully in line with Netanyahu, which is a terrorist state, and they've got their claws in deep. And AIPAC scares a lot of congressmen. They had a vote. Only 10 people voted against standing with Israel. Non-binding resolution doesn't mean anything, but the aid hasn't been cut. And I would like to know, when the UN or the International Criminal Court, when they make all these rules and say you can't use water as a weapon, you can't do this, you can't do that. Okay, when you make rules for what's allowed and not allowed in a war, what then are the consequences for breaking those rules? Because you have to lay out what the consequences will be before you make the law. Because Israel's broken all the laws, but there don't seem to be any consequences.
Here, I want to thank our two guests that join us, Fra Hughes from Antalya, Turkey, and Ryan Dawson joining us out of Osaka. Gentlemen, thank you for that extended conversation. Stay safe. Stay tuned. We're following everything related to Gaza very closely. Goodbye for now.
Is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord and Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. O the Most Merciful.
In the limelight.
In every corner of Gaza, a child, a woman, or an elder has been killed. There is no talk in Gaza now except about the victims of the Zionist regime's brutal aggression. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, an old man sat before his orphaned grandchildren and tearfully addressed them. Tell the messenger of Allah that the world has abandoned us in Gaza. They have forsaken us. O messenger of Allah, the Israelis have cut us to pieces in Gaza. And the nation watches. Tell him, my master. This is one among dozens of heart-moving scenes that occur among the survivors of the ongoing Israeli regime massacres in the Gaza Strip for the 37th consecutive day. Ahmad Badawi, a young Gazan, said, "Tell the world that the streets of Gaza are filled with the scent of musk," referring to the scent of perfume, which is believed to emanate from the body of the martyrs. In every corner of Gaza, a child, a woman, or an elder has been killed. There is no talk in Gaza now except about the victims of the Zionist regime's brutal aggression. Who has been killed? Who has been injured? Where is the new bombing? Is there bread? Have the aid shipments entered? Has the war stopped? Hasn't the world had enough bloodshed? And the martyrs who have fallen? And the children whose bodies have been torn apart? Hasn't the world had enough of just watching? Seven-year-old Mohammad Said, who survived the bombing of his home in the city of Deir al-Balah, said, "The sunlight saved me. Our house was targeted by Israeli airstrikes. I was sitting with my brother Ahmad when suddenly we heard a very loud noise, and I felt like I was falling from an elevator. After that, I lost consciousness." The child who survived the massacre continued, "I woke up after a period. I don't know how long. The place was very dark. I felt around and found my brother Ahmad. I talked to him and he had regained consciousness. We started removing the rubble and stones, crawling under our destroyed house. I saw sunlight in the distance. My brother Ahmad and I began crawling, removing the stones and heading towards it. I managed to scream until someone came to search for survivals. After that, I lost consciousness and didn't wake up until I was in the hospital." Muhammad's brother Ahmad then spoke, "I woke up under the rubble of our house and I was in a lot of pain. With my brother Muhammad, we started moving the stones and heading towards the sunlight. The sunlight was the reason for our rescue. After that, I lost consciousness and didn't wake up until I was in the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. My grandfather, grandmother, father, mother, and siblings were martyred in the bombing of our house. Only my brother Muhammad and I are left. We suffered fractures in the hand and all over the body, and we are currently receiving treatment in the hospital. Only our uncle is left for us. Our entire family was martyred in the Israeli bombing. Our house was completely destroyed by the occupation. Everyone in the house were civilians. We didn't do anything to the occupation for them to bomb us and kill my family." Iman Mashmash, describing the harrowing hours of being trapped under the debris of her family's home in Nuseirat, said, "I stayed with my young son for 12 hours under the rubble. The occupation bombed the house in Nuseirat camp after midnight. I managed to escape from the nearby bombing of my home to my family's house, but the occupation bombed our house and I was trapped with my young son Amr for 12 hours under the rubble." Mashmash explained, "The bombing resulted in the martyrdom of more than 30 members of my family and neighbors. My son and I remained under the rubble for 12 hours. I felt great fear, and the darkness was intense. I would lose consciousness at times, and each time I would hold my son's hand and tell him that they would find us and rescue us." She said, "I don't know when we emerged from under the rubble, but all I know is that my entire family was martyred. Now I am in Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah receiving treatment with fractures all over my body, and doctors have inserted plates. My son has fractures all over his body, and plates have been placed in his foot. The house beside our home was also bombed. My husband told us to stay in a house belonging to the Abu Jarbu family in Nusayrat camp, but it was also bombed. Then my husband took me to my family's home, and it was bombed with all of us inside. There is no safe place in Gaza. All of Gaza is subject to annihilation. Musa Azmi, another resident, told the Palestine Chronicle that his wife is unaware of the fact that their sons and family were killed. He said, "I survived the bombing of our house because I was at work. I work in a small grocery store near my house, and I was standing with my brother at the store's door when we witnessed the bombing of our house. We rushed towards it, and the tragedy unfolded." Azmi added, "My father, mother, brother, two sisters, my niece, and my cousin's daughter were killed. My wife was injured with burns all over her body, and her foot was amputated. My son Azmi was injured with fractures and wounds all over his body." He continued, "I brought out my wife, whose foot was almost severed, and I brought out my daughter Nada and my son Mustafa as martyrs in pieces. I searched a lot for my son Azmi, but I couldn't find him. The bombing threw him onto the house of our neighbors, and they rescued him. For more than 20 days, my wife has been unaware of the death of our two sons. She only knows about my parents. I don't know how to tell her the truth. She always asks about Nada and Mustafa, and I tell her that the bombing is everywhere, and I can't bring them to the hospital for fear of harm. But in reality, they have been killed." He continued, "My wife's condition is not stable. The burns are severe, and her foot has been amputated. The health of my son Azmi is poor, and he has lost much of his memory. The occupation killed everything and deprived me of everything beautiful. I don't know what I will do, but I try to be brave in front of them. They need me to be strong."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
The occupation of Palestine in cinema pictures. part 2. The storytellers of the Arab world encouraged the Palestinian filmmakers who were scattered throughout Arab countries. They were the first people to take some steps to make the dream come true. In Jordan, Ebrahim Sarhan, with his movie Struggle in Jadish, became the first Palestinian filmmaker who played a major role in the process of making a feature film. The movie started the Jordanian cinema, but neither with this movie or other movies made by other Arab filmmakers were created, either quantitatively or qualitatively. Sarhan and his colleagues could not establish any significant cinema trend that was aimed at the goal of liberating Palestine. On the other hand, Israeli cinematographers began to present hand-picked images of a very beautiful, legendary, and rich country that was the island of stability in the Middle East. The goal of making those movies was to present a perfect image of the newly established Israel to encourage the Jews everywhere in the world to immigrate to Israel. In these documentaries, the Israeli cinema was always showing and trying to reach a greater Israel. Before that, the Israeli cinema rarely made feature films, but since the 1960s, the development and support of fictional cinema was put on top of Israel's cultural policies. In that decade, movies were made in Israeli cinema that were known as the Burikaz genre. The movie Sala was the first movie of this genre. These movies, which were mostly superficial and crude comedies, were made based on the story of the immigration and settlement of Jews from all over the world in Israel. These scenes were not satisfactory for the Israelis. After a while, Israel made a huge investment on the production of fiction films. On the one hand, the Jewish immigrant community that had been transferred to Palestine from all over the world after several decades still had no sense of commonality and national pride. Cinema could instill the spirit of patriotism in the immigrant groups by telling stories of unity. The movies that were made with the new strategy opened a window so the audiences all over the world could see the story of the establishment of Israel and its fake history from the angle Israel wanted.
United States of America is proud to be the first nation to recognize the new state of Israel.
With this approach, cinema would practically become a part of the battlefield and pave the way for Hollywood stars to go to Israel. In those movies, Israel was portrayed as an oppressed nation that was invaded by war-mongering Arabs.
Now here's a country surrounded by five Arab nations ready to shove them into the Mediterranean. No guns, no tanks, no friends, nothing. People fighting with their bare hands for a little piece of desert. Because it's the last place on this whole earth that they can go to and try to live
in. And why did you come back?
it was very clear that the stars who stepped in to help Israel would not easily back down. In the last circle, it was always Israel that proved its ability to defend itself and its citizens with the final victory. While the Israelis were equipped both in the media and in practice, Nasser clearly assumed a leadership role in solving the Palestinian issue by establishing the Palestine Liberation Organization. The Arab League meeting in Cairo clearly proved to the Israelis that the Arabs were disunited. June 5, 1967, became the great test of the United Arab Nation. Israel attacked Egypt and captured the Sinai Desert. Israel also inflicted heavy defeats on the Arab armies on the Jordanian and Syrian fronts. The myth of Nasser, the dream of a united Arab nation, and the Palestinian refugees' dreams all collapsed in the Six-Day War and vanished into thin air. The Palestinians, under the leadership of Yasser Arafat, believe the only hope for the liberation of Palestine is the Palestinians themselves and no one else. They pinned all their wishes and dreams on Yasser Arafat. The most famous Palestinian fighter, Arafat managed to establish a left-wing nationalist guerrilla organization named the Fatah Organization in Jordan. To expand its activities and strengthen itself against the Zionist front, the Fatah Organization started recruiting new members. Solafa Jodala Mersal, a Palestinian woman who had studied photography in Cairo, was one of the new members who joined Fatah. She started a small photography studio in her apartment in Amman and set up photography equipment in her kitchen. Her main concern was to make commemorative pictures of the guerrillas and marchers. Mustafa Abu Ali and Hani Johariya, two Palestinians who had studied cinema and were living in Jordan, joined Mersal. They had worked for the Jordanian television for many years. They borrowed cameras from there and recorded everything as much as possible. Demonstrations, public gatherings, or any other political and cultural activities. And later on, a photography department was established and the first sparks of the Palestinian documentary cinema were formed from the heart of that structure. The 60s was a decade of the great rebellion of European filmmakers against Hollywood. Jean-Luc Godard, as the most famous filmmaker of the New Wave in France, was at the forefront of all the rebellions that targeted the capitalist system and the Hollywood studio system. In 1968, Godard, the most revolutionary anti-Hollywood filmmaker, went to Jordan. He visited the Palestinian camps, met Abu Ali, Hani, Johariya, and their friends, and filmed the refugee camps and guerrilla bases. He used the videos in a movie titled Here and Elsewhere. In the same year, the U.S. proposed a peace plan to the conflicting parties in the Middle East. The Palestinians objected and started a demonstration on the streets of Jordan. The experience of accompanying Palestinians with great revolutionary directors had awakened the dormant dreams of Abu Ali and his friends. When the photography department team, whose main members were Mustafa Abu Ali, Hani, Johariya, and Mersal, watched the recorded images of the demonstrations, they came to the conclusion that they have everything they needed to make a movie. So they started working and made a 20-minute movie called Say No to the Peace Plan. It was the first movie of resistance organizations. The movie was screened to senior leaders of Fatah. The Palestinian leaders found something in the movie that became the main reason for their interest in cinema. The power of cinema in explaining the situation in the battlefield. The Revolution Cinema was the title Fatah leaders chose for the Palestinian cinema. Mustafa Abu Ali, in a statement, wrote for Palestine Film Foundation and highlighted the goals of the revolutionary cinema as follows. The sound of guns should be louder than any other sound. Light weapons are the people's main weapons in the war, and in the same way, light 16mm cameras are the most suitable weapon for the cinema about people. The success of a movie should be measured by the same criteria as the success of a military operation. They are both seeking to realize a political ideal.
We create a new people. And instead of being refugees, to be fighters. This is very important. We were refugees, homeless. We became now fighters, freedom fighters.
In the first step, the Palestinian cinema changed a stereotypical image of the Palestinian people. Now, after 20 years, the motivated pictures of the cinematographers replaced the image of the oppressed Palestinian refugees with that of fighting warriors. The Israelis could not put up with the Palestinians, who were now united to liberate their land. Soon enough, the conflict between Fatah and Israel began. Fatah guerrillas were the most important targets of Israel in its attacks on the Karameh village in Jordan. After Israel's rapid retreat, the battle became a legendary victory for the Palestinians, whose value doubled after the heavy defeat by the Arabs in the Six-Day War. Only in the first 48 hours after the end of the war, 5,000 Palestinians applied for membership in the organization. The Battle of Karameh initially brought about the unity of the Kingdom of Jordan and the Palestinians. But soon, the gaining of power by Fatah's guerrillas led to internal differences, and that got out of control and led to a widespread and bloody conflict. King Hussein of Jordan was targeted in an assassination attempt. The Jordanian army blamed the Palestinians. In In September of 1970, King Hussein attacked the guerrillas' positions and pushed them back to the Syrian borders. Although the Fatah organization inevitably set up its organization once again in the south of Lebanon, the eventful years after exile left a deep impact on Palestinian society. Defeated by Israel and the West, disillusionment with the Arabs, the bad conditions of the refugees and displacement and isolation in Arab societies strengthened the unity of the people who were suffering from similar mental injuries. A narrative based on a common pain could act as a unifying factor. A great task was assigned to the Palestinian cinema, introducing the Palestinian national narrative instead of the failed idea of a united Arab nation. Making more than 60 documentary films was an answer to the need. The documentaries that were made those years were presented through a simple narrative that had a fixed pattern. It seems in these movies, all places are the same, and it's a collective situation for Palestinians. The soothing images of trees and orchards, even if they're just inside the refugee camps, they will suddenly be bombarded. The scenes of destruction and death after strikes are eventually replaced with the epic views of weapons, military training, and battle. The goal of recreating the battle scenes in these documentaries is to show a good ending to get rid of the pain of failure. By different means, the documentaries emphasize the correction of the past is made possible by referring to children or by depicting them. They are the manifestation of the future and hope against despair and disappointment of the past. In many scenes, the images of children are merged with the images of soldiers, followed by epic images of the Palestinian flag. These are the common symbols that continuously appear in Palestinian cinema and literature. They are the embodiments of hope, resurrection, and struggle. At first glance, this structure describes specific events, but since these stereotypes are repeated over and over in the form of similar scenes, it becomes something more than the recurring stereotypes. The most important achievement of the repetitive structure is the creation of a shared historical memory. The memory paints a unified picture of the Palestinian nation. As a result, geographically and socially, the divided community of refugees is united around a single memory. The memory of the United Palestinian Nation.
in the limelight.
The World Health Organization has said a child is killed on average every 10 minutes in the besieged Gaza Strip, warning that nowhere and no one is safe under the Zionist regime's relentless onslaught on the coastal enclave. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Common Dreams wrote, on the same day GOP clowns and yahoos played out an evil game of condemning the only Palestinian-American member of Congress for opposing genocide and insisting we cannot lose our shared humanity, Palestinian doctors facing an avalanche of human suffering unveiled their grisly new acronym for a kind of war victim unique to the Gaza Strip, WCNSF, for Wounded Child No Surviving Family. One doctor, this should be seared into our collective conscience and haunt us. In its grotesque distortion of a righteous stand, the House finally censured Representative Rashida Tlaib for denouncing a savage, the Zionist regime assault that has killed over 11,000 Palestinians, most civilians, almost half children, in a month. 22 Democrats joined Republicans to vote for a resolution that falsely accused Tlaib of calling for a destruction of the regime of Israel. Its sponsor, Representative Rich McCormick, also charged Tlaib levied unbelievable falsehoods about our greatest ally, Israel, as they claimed. In fact, Tlaib has painfully, repeatedly mourned the loss of civilian lives while decrying a brutal apartheid system that gave rise to it and an ongoing anti-Palestinian bigotry that has sustained it. In a tearful speech, she argues she seeks only to ensure that all people can live in peace and tranquility. She said, "I can't believe I have to say this, but Palestinian people are not disposable." Insisting no government is beyond criticism, she noted a majority of Americans support a ceasefire. But this Congress isn't listening to their voices. This was the second censure effort after Marjorie Space Laser Green unsuccessfully charged Tlaib led an insurrection by joining a peaceful protest of Jews demanding a ceasefire. Green tried and failed again by changing the language to illegal occupation, evidently without irony. Still, critics blasted the malevolent idiocy behind GOP efforts to silence Tlaib rather than save lives and their partisan unprecedented wielding of censure to do it, especially after they remained silent when GOP colleagues compared all Palestinians to Nazis and called for turning Gaza into a parking lot. In a stark contrast, argued supporters, Congresswoman Tlaib's moral courage will never be extinguishable. Derek Davidson wrote, Tlaib should ask for a copy of the censure resolution, dip it in bronze, and hang it on her office wall. Being condemned by this abhorrent mob of psychopaths is a badge of honor if ever there was one. Others blasted Dems who joined in the bigotry. Meanwhile, the killing of innocent Palestinians goes on. It has been over a month of unimaginable loss in Gaza, with deaths reaching more than 11,000. UN and other rights workers describe disastrous and catastrophic conditions. No food, no water, no power, no flour for bread. Infectious diseases surging from failing sanitation systems. Hospitals overflowing with patients on floors as depleted doctors perform surgery without anesthetic. Relentless Israeli regime airstrikes hit a humanitarian convoy of trucks carrying vital medical supplies to hospitals. Unfathomably, they also hit Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital, including the pediatric cancer ward, reportedly twice. Wrenching videos show civilians fleeing Gaza City on foot, white flags and hands in the air. And the aftermath of a bombing in Al-Maghazi refugee camp that killed 9 members of one family. People weeping, yelling, running with small bodies to an idling car, hoping to get them to a hospital alive. Media coverage often worsens the crimes. Talk of a conflict, use of a passive were killed, with no mention of the killers, like an act of God, disbelief about the devastation. We must verify our deaths as we die, amidst the grim reality that there is not a single person who will come out unscathed physically or psychologically. As always, the true victims are children. The Zionist regime has now killed over 5,000 Palestinian children, one roughly every 10 minutes, and twice the total killed since 1967 in the West Bank and Gaza combined. Thousands more remain missing under rubble.